walking you down memory lane. These things I say might seem to offend, but not half as much as I'd like to intend. 'Cause listen to you reminds me of a motor's endless drone, and how the deaf are so.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is James Moore, who's the author of The Architect, Karl Rove and the Dream of Absolute Power, Bush's War for Re-Election, and he's the co-author with Wayne Slater of the bestseller Bush's Brain, How Karl Rove Made George W. Bush Presidential, and the author of Bush's War for Re-Election. An Emmy Award-winning television news correspondent, he has traveled extensively with every presidential campaign since 1976, and he's writing a new book on Texas Governor Rick Perry. Welcome to Background Briefing, James Moore.
Always good to be with you, Ian.
And Jim, do you think that now that you're doing a book on Perry, is this 53-second brain freeze the final chapter?
I think what's appropriate is the title of the book, which is Adios Mofo, which is one of Perry's comments that he made to a reporter when he got tired of answering questions. I think what will happen with Perry is that he won't quit right away. I think the thing that you have to consider is that he has never been able to embarrass himself, and he isn't self-aware enough to understand that he looks horrible and that he should go away. And he is, you know, he's one of these guys who thinks, well, I'll try something, I'll do it until I fail, and I'll try again. So he's not going away anytime soon. And remember, he had more money than anybody else. He had $13 million. So he has $13 million left. He had $15 million. And it comes down to a question of what his money people and his advisors will tell him. Look, Governor, it's hopeless. Don't do this to yourself. But it's not at that state yet. And I think he's probably going to stay around at least through Iowa to see what happens. And I suspect he'll hang around at least through South Carolina if he can raise money. But what I'm hearing today from people close to the campaign, that raising money is becoming an issue.
So far, though, the money he's raised from the people that are backing him, my understanding is that's what Big Oil and a lot of his local backers. Give us a description of who it is that thought this guy could be president of the United States.
Well, it's a bet that corporate America is making, Ian. And these guys, the Fortune 500s, all the multinationals, have been coming to Texas and doing whatever they want under Perry. They walk in, and it's almost a quid pro quo. It's, you know, people call it cronyism, but I felt all along that it's absolute corruption. Instead of being elected, the guy should be indicted. He basically says, okay, what's the deal? What do you want to do? And then, you know, he ends up with a nice campaign donation, which is what we saw in the HPV case. And so those are the people who are betting on him because they love the idea of a Rick Perry in the White House where all they have to do is pick up the phone and say, you know, hey, Governor, let's get rid of all the EPA regulations, or maybe let's turn FEMA into KBR Halliburton FEMA and sell naming rights to federal agencies and basically privatize everything that exists in America. Those are the people that are betting on him. And a lot of those corporations, especially the energy industry, are headquartered here in Texas. So whether they will back off from that bet, I don't know. But I don't think it's going to happen just that quickly.
Well, I guess, Jim Moore, the point I was trying to make is that this is an example of corporate cynicism and the extent to which business titans look down upon politicians as mere hirelings. That is endemic. But I guess in this case, the point is that they didn't even bother to get a guy that could even pass muster and get elected on the unlimited amounts of money they were prepared to pour his way. That's
But he had done so well in Texas, Ian.
He had been
their yard man in Texas for so long. They thought, well, geez, let's go ahead and see how this plays on the national stage. And I think that's where it fell apart, because he never had to debate here. He never really had to be accountable for anything. He ran off to the right edge of the political cracker, and the voters followed him. And, you know, he had enough support to get elected. But, you know, he would not have gotten elected in the last in the 2006 campaign, if the Democrats had got their act together and had not divided the vote three ways, he only got 39% of the total.
So it's not a case of the his backers not doing their due diligence then?
No, I think that they love this guy. Mm-hmm. I think the cynicism you describe is astute as all get out. But I think that they love him because he is simply their manservant. He is a guy who will do as the multinational corporations want, and they know it. We have great experience with it down here. I mean, here's a guy who allows his own state to have one out of four people without health insurance, and we have the highest number of people over age 25 without a high school diploma. We have the most uninsured children in America, and he doesn't confront those issues, and yet he creates a $500 million corporate fund to lure businesses to Texas and writes these checks. And people like, you know, Washington Mutual came down here, Countrywide came down here, all of these, you know, HP, they came down here and they promised, give us $20 million and we'll create 3,000 jobs. Well, they come down here and they create 50 jobs, and they don't have to pay it back, you know. And those are the things that he is interested in, and he's not interested in the human issues that are a central part of government.
Again, I'm speaking with James Moore, the author of a number of bestsellers and also Texas-based Emmy Award-winning television news correspondent who's traveled extensively with every presidential campaign since 1976. He's writing a new book on Texas Governor Rick Perry, who in the Republican debate, the most recent one, had a 53-second brain freeze where he was simply unable to remember his own simplistic ideas. I mean, that's the part of it I find extraordinary. It's not as if his platform is particularly complicated.
No, he frankly doesn't. I don't think has a platform beyond, you know, the sort of GOP conservative archetype, which is let's remove regulations for business, let's cut taxes for business, and let's get out of the way and let business run the world and we'll all be better off. He hasn't had any more complex political thinking than that, and he hasn't needed it in Texas, frankly. He keeps getting away with things down here that are just, in most states, would be beyond comprehension. As I said a little bit earlier, I think it transcends cronyism, and it's actual corruption. It's a cash and carry government. It's pay for play. And you know, he just recently cut $4 billion from the state budget that cost us 100,000 approximate professional educators, schools to close, and we have horrible test scores down in this state. And none of this seems to be of concern for him, and he's yet to pay a political price.
Well, Jim Moore, if he would have answered the question right, he said there were three agencies he was going to cut: commerce, education, and he couldn't think of the third. And he was prompted by Romney, who said EPA, and then he said, no, that's not it. And apparently the answer he was looking for was the Department of Energy. Well, had he remembered that, of course, that's an absurd notion, even for a conservative, because they're the custodians of the nuclear weapons, you know. Would he be able to answer the question, oh, you want to get rid of the nuclear arsenal too?
Yeah, well, you know, it's beyond an absurd notion, but he views it just as he does the Department of Education as creating regulations that get in the way. You know, he talks about better schools being run locally, and then, you know, we in Texas, our kids are tested so many times that most estimates are now they spend 80% of the year preparing for or taking tests in public schools, and they're not learning anything other than how to pass tests. And this is something that he has pushed upon the Texas taxpayer. And oddly enough, you know, one of his big political supporters and a guy who is on his staff at the same time he's lobbying for this company called Pearson Publishing, they have a contract which is worth $500 million a year with the state of Texas to administer these tests. These are the kinds of things that, you know, they pass for yawning politics down here, and Rick Perry gets away with it.
Well, it's an extension of what Bush tried to do. After all, he was the architect of Leave No Child Behind. Isn't it a part of this notion of privatizing anything that's public and turning schools into businesses?
Great. The thing I find astonishing about it, though, Ian, is that how can you, out of one side of your political mouth, talk about less regulation and less involvement in making government as inconsequential as possible in your life, and then turn around and say, oh, by the way, the state is going to administer these $500 million worth of tests to our kids every year to measure them, and the kids are learning how to take tests, but they aren't learning how to think. They aren't learning how to read, and we never call these guys out. In particular, Perry never gets called out on these obvious contradictions. And I'll go back to what I said earlier. I think a part of that is that the public's disconnected. The public is, the level of cynicism that the public has is approaching that of what the corporate guys are, who view the Rick Perrys of the world as hirelings. I think that the process has broken down, and our democracy is bordering on dysfunctional. And if nothing has demonstrated that, it's the quality of the Republican presidential candidates, or the lack of quality, that are even being considered for this job. I mean, Mitt Romney has been all over the map on various issues. He's more politically craven than even John McCain was in the last election. And Newt Gingrich, and the list of people that are on that stage that have almost no qualifications to be president of the United States ought to frighten the American people. But they apparently are not paying close enough attention.
Well, obviously, Rick Perry's cronies got a $500 million contract there. That's his MO in terms of the people who administer these tests. And I entirely agree with you about the absolutely astounding ignorance that's displayed, and also some of the most blatant prejudice, and particularly from Herman Cain. I mean, he said some really outrageous things that nobody checks him out. And the debate that they just had, they clearly all agreed not to even mention Herman Cain's problems. But there was one question from the CNBC reporter about these growing number of sexual harassment charges being leveled at Herman Cain. The audience booed the reporter, and then they cheered Cain for his non-answer.
I think it's kind of strange that, and I was, you know, when we had spoken previously, I've been thinking about this a bit, and I begin to wonder if everybody talks about the new kind of economy we're dealing with, where we're going to live with 10% approximate unemployment forever and ever, and we have to all make do with less, and the markets are not responding to, investment and debt and loss and credit and interest rates anymore. The markets are disconnected, and everybody talks about a new economy. I think that what may be associated with that is a new kind of politics where you can do these things and not suffer. It's perhaps a politics of alignment, maybe, that if you are aligned with a particular group and a particular type of thinking, people suggest that you're their candidate, and there's not much that can be done to knock their judgment off. And because if we were still in a sort of political reality where your morality and your record mattered, Herman Cain would be history, and Rick Perry wouldn't even have gotten this far. And yet, Cain's numbers, while they've taken a hit, we haven't seen him be completely destroyed, which would have happened, I think, is as far back as 2000, and certainly 96 or in the Clinton era. So there's something new has happened that I don't think we've quite figured it out yet, Ian.
Well, Jim Moore, you mentioned morality. That, I think, is what's astounding about what's happening. And our previous guest, of course, was talking about the Paterno case at Penn State. It feels like the entire country's adrift without a moral compass, that it doesn't matter. Morality and ethics don't matter. That is, I think, I can understand everybody does reality shopping and they want their reality reinforced. But what about this measure of human civilization, morality?
Well, it used to be important in politics, but the human nature of people who were our public representatives who spoke for us was often hidden from us. And, you know, everybody cites John Kennedy as the most obvious example. But then one day Gary Hart said, follow me around, and reporters did, and they discovered that he was not who he said he was. And it launched a complete new dynamic in terms of journalism. And what we end up discovering more and more is that not only are the people that we choose to lead us not any different than us, in most cases, they are considerably less than us. And if that's the way the people we have chosen to lead the country are acting, and that's their moral status, then what does it say, as you suggest, about the rest of us? And everything from Penn State to an immoral war to the way we spend our tax dollars, we seem to not know who we are anymore. I think the people of the United States used to know who we are and what we stood for, and now we all wonder. We all look at what's happening in our communities. We look at what's happening on the national level and in our politics and our government, and we basically see institutions in what looks like an almost constant state of decline, and we either feel very frustrated trying to do something about it, or we throw up our hands and suggest, I'm just one guy, and my vote obviously doesn't count because I've been voting for 40 years, and nothing has changed, and it's only getting worse, and we cave in, just like the people who are leading us, and I think that things continue to fall apart. How we turn this around, I wish I knew, because then I would run for public office.
Well, just in closing, Jim Moore, back to Perry, there was another meltdown before this where he appeared to be drunk in a speech he gave recently in New Hampshire. And his handlers came out and said, no, he wasn't drunk. And he rambled on. A number of people, Rachel Maddow and others, had some fun with it. You know this guy. You've known him for years. Does he? We know about DWI, right? This is a case of what? Campaigning, CWI, campaigning under the CUI.
I know that Rick drinks, and I know of, there's an incident that's detailed in the new book about, when he got to Austin and he'd been here a couple of years, he'd been asked to carry a piece of legislation. He agreed to it, but he often said, don't bother me with details because I'm not going to pay any attention anyway. Just tell me when and where to show up. And he would start hanging out at the Austin Club where the lobbyists were, and they'd buy him drinks and dinner. And, here's this poor dirt farmer kid from West Texas, and he no longer has to worry about the tab. And, he liked to party, and he showed up one night drunk to a committee hearing where a bill that his name was on was to be heard. So it's not impossible. And he has also, he's had these back problems, and I think he's been taking pain pills, and he's over campaigning, and it's entirely possible in the plane into New Hampshire that night, he may have taken a pain pill and had a cold beer or a sip of wine or some sort of adult beverage, and he got on stage and made a fool of himself. And it's entirely possible that he decided that he was being overmanaged and was just going to let fly. But I've seen him speak many, many, many times, and he's never been animated in that way. And his reaction to getting a bottle of maple syrup was beyond ridiculous. So there was something going on, whether it was him deciding to be different, to consciously make an effort to be different, or whether whether he was under some sort of influence, there was something going on that was different than anything I'd ever seen before out of him.
But that's not the same as what happened at the latest Republican debate, because no way in the world a candidate would have got tipsy before such a major event. He simply just is who he is. He's just not up to the task.
He is not, as we say down here, packing the gear. And I think that Rick is, as I said, he's early in his career, and he simply was not interested in legislation. If people had a bill, whether it was a farmers union or whomever, they would go to him and say, here's what this bill will do. And he would say, okay, I'll put my name on it. And they would go out, write up the bill, and bring it back, tell him when the committee hearing was, and he wouldn't even read his briefing papers. He would have them sit there and tell them what they wanted him to say, and then they would go away, and he'd show up at the committee hearing or have somebody call him on when he needed to be there, and he would go in and do his bit and leave. He's very much like Bush in that, he's a dilettante. He's not interested in the details. He's a minimalist, and he's been able to get away with it up until now.
Well, James Moore, I thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure, Ian.
Again, I've been speaking with James Moore, who's the author of The Architect, Karl Rove and the Dream of Absolute Power, Bush's War for Re-Election, and he's co-author with Wayne Slater of the bestseller Bush's Brain, How Karl Rove Made George W. Bush Presidential. He's also the author of Bush's War for Re-Election. He's an Emmy Award-winning television news correspondent who's traveled extensively with every presidential campaign since 1976 and is writing a new book on Texas Governor Rick Perry. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be joined in the studio by science writer Margaret Wertheim. Scared.